I can't tell what's real right now. I'm too dazed. I look up, and it takes a long moment to understand that Detective James Lowell is moving toward me across the snow, stepping over Jacob's mangled head, lowering a gleaming silver gun to his side.
Silver, Miss Parisi, are you okay?
I blink at him.
Silver, look at me. Are you hurt?
He has me by the shoulders. The gun's still in his hand, and he presses it against my bare arm, the muzzle pointing up toward the sky as he ducks down, peering into my eyes, looking concerned.
You shouldn't be out here, kid.
Hold on, wait!
The sound of the panic and the cry behind me snaps me out of my shock. I'm falling. I come back into myself with a sharp, unpleasant jolt that feels like I just hit the sidewalk after slipping from the ledge of a 10-story building. There are people everywhere. Three of the Raleigh High football team are scrambling in the snow, whimpering, clinging to one another as they stare in horror at the pool of blood spreading in the snow around Jake's ruined head. Xander and Halliday are standing stock still, taking in the chaos to my right. And weirdly, my doctor is prowling towards Alex's old boss with a gun in her hands. Monty shakes his head, his gray hair coming loose from his ponytail as he backs away from her.
Listen, there's money, a lot of money. The bar, too. You can have the bar. I was thinking about retiring anyway.
As if by some weird trick of the light, Zeth coalesces out of nowhere, like the very shadows themselves merged together and gave him form and life. I've never seen anything like it before. One moment there's only the ink-black darkness, and then there he is, all murder and death, with the biggest silver gun I've ever seen in his hands. He lovingly caresses Dr. Romero's cheek, shaking his head.
There she is, my angry girl. Hate to make you break a promise, though. You save lives. You don't take them.
His hand whips up, and he fires the gun. I brace for the sound. The gun's so massive, I expect an ear-splitting bang, but there's nothing more than the dull thud of Montgomery Cohen III's body hitting the snow. A rifle suppressor. A regular silencer wasn't good enough for the weapon in Zeth's hands. He literally needed a rifle suppressor to mute it. A commotion breaks out as Zeth and Dr. Romero approach the three guys on the football team. I can't even muster up a single fuck to give about them. All I care about is the dark, still form lying on a patch of ice 10 feet away. Jacob didn't shoot Alex, but he's far too still. Oh God, no, why the hell isn't he moving? Detective Lowell says something to me, but I shake myself out of his grasp. I reach Alex, skidding toward him on my knees, and for a terrible heartbeat, I see the way he's staring up at the sky, and I think he's fucking dead. And then he blinks.
Weird. Night.
His voice breaks when he speaks. Wincing, he tries to roll onto his side, but it seems to take his breath away, so he slumps back into the snow. I quickly help him, lifting his head and placing it carefully into my lap.
I'm hallucinating, right?
He says, his eyes searching for and finding mine. His face is a patchwork of bruises, forming rapidly underneath his skin. His lips split open, as is his left eyebrow, and there's a gash on his temple, but he seems fairly alert. The vine tattoos around the base of his throat shift as he swallows.
Lowell shot Jake.
A strangled laugh wells up and spills out of me, anxious and too loud.
Yeah, I have no fucking clue what's going on. Are you okay?
He nods, slowly lifting his hand and taking hold of mine, squeezing it reassuringly.
Of course I am.
You don't look okay.
He smiles, thankfully all of his teeth are still where they're supposed to be.
Wow, rude. If he's smiling, then he's definitely concussed as fuck. Xander says.
He drops down next to Alex, peering over him suspiciously. Shock sets in all over again as Xander fusses over Alex. The weight of what's just happened finally begins to hit me, and my calm starts to slip away from me. I just watched two people get shot. My boyfriend's in pieces. Again. How the fuck are we getting out of this shit fight unscathed? Zeth appears opposite me, crouching down, forearms on his thighs, his hands hanging loosely between his legs as he dips his head, trying to make eye contact with me.
Sometimes the job's way bigger than you think. Sometimes you do need a demolitions expert after all, he says.
And what about that? I ask numbly, eyeing Jacob's body. God, this is so weird. He was a monster, a creature made of nightmares who posed such a threat to me and those I love not 5 minutes ago. And now he's this fake-looking, mangled, empty vessel. Now he's nothing at all.
Don't worry about that, Zeth rumbles. I'll get this cleared up. I know a guy.
42. Alex. Where the hell is he? No, I'm not his father. Look, lady, I'm going into that hospital room whether you like it or... I need to see if he's... Thank you. Yeah, well, you can report me to security. I don't care. The door opens and Cameron blazes into the room like a meteor coming in hot. He's panting, and he looks like he's ready to physically fight someone. Curled up in the armchair with her legs dangling over the armrest, Silver doesn't even stir from her slumber when her father bursts into the room. I smile, because he's just so ridiculous sometimes. And you're normally so good with people, I say, pouting. Weird that she wouldn't let you in. In fairness, the woman sitting at the nurse's station outside my room is terrifying. Silver had to lie and tell her she was my sister in order to gain entrance to my room, which is kind of awkward now since the nurse saw Silver kiss me on the mouth about half an hour ago. God knows what she thinks is going on between us. Still alive then? That's nice, Cam observes, planting his hands on his hips. It's all over Raleigh. Jacob Weaving's dead? Why? He shakes his head as he looks up at the ceiling. I know exactly how he's feeling because I'm feeling the same way. Confused, exasperated, lost for words. What the fuck happened? He asks. You guys went to prom for fuck's sake, and somehow that motherfucker winds up with his brain splattered all over the basketball court. I swear to God. I'd laugh if I could, but it hurts too much. Besides, it's not really funny. It is typical, though. Of course Silver and I weren't going to be able to make it through a dance at Raleigh High without the world blowing up in our faces. I explain what happened as best I can, shrugging through the parts when Agent Lowell showed up and shot Jake, and Cam listens without saying a word. When I've filled in the details I have to hand, he sighs, kneading the back of his neck with his fingers. Why did you go out there with him in the first place? He asks quietly. You had to know. I figured I could take him, and I just wanted it to be over. Silver had been through enough, I tell him. That's the only real explanation I can give him. It was time for the situation to be dealt with properly, and I really had thought it would turn out differently. Aren't you sick and tired already of looking at yourself in the mirror and seeing so many bruises? All of the time, Alex. You look like a goddamn punching bag. Cam says morosely. Dr. Romero said it's a miracle they didn't break your jaw. Yeah, well, it kind of feels like they did, so. I open my mouth as wide as I can, stretching out my jaw, and it hurts like a motherfucker. I should just leave it be, but I can't help myself. Propped up against what feels like a cloud's worth of pillows in a rather sexy hospital gown, I know that the body-wide numbness I'm feeling right now is a short reprieve. They gave me the good pain meds when they wheeled me in here, but it won't be long before they wear off, and I won't be taking any more. I'd rather be sharp in my head and suffering than fuzzy and fucked up like I am now. As for the bruises, there won't be any more. I promise. I'll be healed up and out of here in a couple of days, and that'll be it. No more fighting. No more conflict, no more drama. I've decided I'm gonna bust my ass and get a spot at Dartmouth. It's what she wants, and I'm gonna give it to her. This makes him laugh. Wow, you must be super fucking high if you're talking about college. So high, I confirm. Cam looks at his daughter, passed out in a set of scrubs Dr. Romero gave her, and wipes his hand over his face. I can't say I approve of you going after Jake on your own like that, but it makes sense. She's been through so much, I probably would have done the same thing. Of course you would. You love her. A rush of tingling euphoria crests in my chest as another wave of the meds washes over me. For a moment, I feel really fucking good, like I just dumped a whole heap of MDMA down my throat. Have the cops shown up? I ask. It's inevitable. I've been waiting for them to roll in here en masse and start with their questioning. It's standard protocol to interview people naturally, but someone died tonight. There'll be an investigation without a shadow of a doubt. I'll be interrogated and harassed until they somehow make Jake's death my fault. And I can hardly defend myself by saying I went out there to shake hands and bury the hatchet with the dude. I was gonna fucking kill him. Don't worry about the cops, Cam says. Apparently this whole nightmare is gonna be handled by the DEA directly. Jesus, I don't know if that's better or a million times worse. Nothing's really making much sense right now. Can you do me a favor, man? I ask, my voice hoarse. So long as it doesn't involve breaking you out of this place, then sure. You need to stay here overnight at least. You took a pretty bad beating. I've had way, way worse. How fucked up is that? I just smile brokenly at Silver's dad, though. Get her out of here, will you? I'm so sick and tired of her being pulled back to this place. It's fucking depressing, and she wouldn't say it, but it makes her anxious. Cam nods, studying the girl asleep on the chair. Cameron and I have very little in common, but the fact that we'd both do anything for Silver makes us more alike than either of us would care to admit.
Yeah, I reckon I can do that, he says.
She doesn't even wake up when he lifts her into his arms and carries her out of the hospital room. It's somewhere in between very late and very early when my next visitor arrives. He enters the room at around 4:30 in the morning, carrying a styrofoam cup and a brown paper bag full of fast food. Lowell's hair is all messed up and there are dark shadows under his eyes, but he's alert. Sharp in a wired, hyper-focused way that happens to people when they drink too much coffee or take way too much speed. I've been waiting for him. He doesn't say anything until he sits himself on the chair by the bed, pulls a burger out of the paper bag, removes the lid from the styrofoam cup, dumps a sugar into the acerbic-smelling black liquid inside, stirs it, and has himself officially situated. I had a sister, he says. I always used to look up to her. She was a lot older than me. Our parents thought she walked on fucking water. No matter what shit was going on at home or whatever, Dee was always in charge and in control. She never lost her cool. He takes a big sip from his coffee, raising his eyebrows when he realizes it's too hot. He swallows regardless. Our dad was a fighter pilot, and then he joined the police force when he came out of the Air Force. Natural progression, everyone said. He was a hard guy to live with, but Dee knew exactly how to handle him. She got away with murder. Me, on the other hand, I was a major disappointment. Never good enough. I couldn't put a single foot wrong. Denise was accepted into the DEA, and she was his fucking hero, serving her country. I joined the DEA, and I was a lazy, worthless piece of shit who couldn't hate to interrupt. I shift uncomfortably in the bed, wincing. But I'm a little messed up at the moment. Any chance we could save the family history for another time? You know, go grab lunch and really get into it. Bring out the photo albums. Everything kind of hurts at the moment, and I'm struggling to care about the Lowell family dynamic, fascinating though it sounds. The agent shoves the burger into his mouth and takes a monster bite. Wiping his mouth with the back of his hand, he mumbles around his food. I'll paraphrase. Dee was a bitch. She got too caught up in the job and went off the rails. Your friend Zeth there, we're not friends. God, can you just shut up and listen for 5 seconds? Zeth was her white whale. You read Moby Dick, right? I raise my eyebrows. Detective Lowell takes this as an affirmative and continues. She could never pin that motherfucker down, and it drove her mad. She broke protocol, completely lost it. I won't bother with the details, but the Weavings, they were my white whale. The whole fucking family. Huh. I wasn't expecting that. Ever since he showed up in Raleigh, the DEA agent's been by Jacob's side. He's been on him like white on rice.
Jake was so sure that Lowell was in his back pocket from the way he was talking before he pointed that gun at me. Not to mention the way Lowell went after Silver, trying to make out like she concocted the whole rape plan and made up the entire attack that happened at Leon's. So you went rogue to catch your white whale too, I surmise. Lowell bites, chews, swallows. There are a lot of rules when you work for an organization like the DEA. They can be a little restrictive. I'm good at, he shrugs, bending those rules from time to time, if it means I get the job done in the end. The higher-ups wouldn't like it, but hey, what they don't know can't hurt them, right? He finishes his burger in 4 bites and immediately takes out another one. Didn't like having to treat your girl like crap there, dude, but it was a necessary evil at the time. You feel me? Am I supposed to nod or something? Tell him his bizarre and unorthodox way of doing his job is all right by me now that Jake's dead? Fuck it, maybe it is all right by me. He put a bullet hole in Jake's skull, and he saved my fucking life. It's all over. Silver won't even need to stand up in court now, which is fucking huge. The Weavings drove my grandparents' farm out of business when I was a kid. They tried to salvage what they could of their livelihood once Caleb and his crew began forced sales in the area, but it was impossible. The Weavings ruined them. My grandfather ended up committing suicide to avoid the debt and the shame. So you could say I've had my eye on that asshole my entire life. Can I tell you something? He says, leaning in close. I feel like you're going to anyway. I watched all the pieces fall into place with the Weaving case, and it was obvious what was going to happen. Caleb was going to wriggle his way out of that shit, no doubt about it, and that asshole son of his was going to walk too. Too much power and money changing hands. Give it another couple of months and both of them were going to be released with no recourse for their actions. I wasn't going to have that. So yeah, I made Jacob trust me, and the moment he gave me justifiable cause, I put that fucker down like the dog that he was. Wow, stone fucking cold. I hated this guy from the moment I set eyes on him, but looks like I had him wrong. Honestly, I have no clue what to make of him now, but shit. Jake's dead. That's all I fucking care about. I took care of the paperwork. Lowell slumps back into the chair. You and your girl, you're free of all this shit. My way of saying sorry for how strong I came on. You can go about your lives and wash your hands of the whole business. Glorious, glorious relief. It feels so much better than the drugs coursing around my system. We're free? That feels... Damn, I can't even describe how good that feels. And what about you? What about Caleb? He's gonna be out for blood when he hears you shot his precious boy in the head. Lowell smiles, absently drumming his finger against the arm of the chair. Oh yeah, Caleb. Heard this morning that there was an incident at the prison. Not sure what went down, really. Some kind of fight over a toothbrush. Caleb Weaving was stabbed in the neck in the prison yard. Didn't make it. Very unfortunate turn of events. Very unfortunate indeed. I can tell the guy's super broken up that Jake's father avoided justice by bleeding out on the snow in a prison exercise yard. He looks positively distraught right now. Huh. And Zeth? What about him? He shot Monty. Actually, Lowell frowns. I know nothing about Monty. There was only one body found at the scene, and I've never met Zeth Mayfair in person. If I did meet the guy, I'd probably have to kill him. I know perfectly well what I saw, and from the odd, secret smile on Lowell's face, he knows what I saw too. This is the line he's sticking with, though, and I'm not going to argue with him if he wants to give Zeth a free pass. For some unknown reason, the guy helped us out, and I'm grateful to him for that. 43. Alex. 2 months later. Emancipation's a powerful word. It holds an ocean of power within its 5 syllables. For a long time now, it's been a word that has taunted and eluded me. It's held me back from so many things because it was always out of reach. But today, a sunny spring day in April, I have finally been granted my emancipation, and it feels oh so bittersweet. I'm free today, because today is my 18th birthday. You know, I had the whole thing planned out, I say, staring up at the sky. The wind's still a little cool, but the sun's out. Wispy, thin clouds slowly float from one side of my vision to the other, forming and disintegrating before they can even properly come together. Cirrus clouds, my favorite kind. We were going to drive all the way down the PCH to San Diego, our first Moretti Boys road trip. I was going to take you to the aquarium there. We were going to swim in the ocean and ride bikes on the strand by the water. When we got back, I was going to take you to the pound, and I was going to let you pick out a dog to bring home with you, to our house. Fuck. I hope you know how perfect it would have been, how well I would have taken care of you, how badly I wish I could change this, how much it hurts when I even think your name. I swallow hard, clearing my throat. Laying on my back in the cemetery wasn't how I'd planned to spend today. I was going to keep myself busy, keep on moving, keep my mind occupied until the day was over and done with. But all of those plans disappeared the second the sun came up. I got out of bed before 6, careful not to wake Silver, and I left the apartment, my feet guiding me here all by themselves. I couldn't have altered my path even if I'd wanted to. I think I always knew, in my heart, that you liked living with Jackie. I knew she was good for you, even if she was a bitch and she kept trying to come between us, and I think I made you feel guilty for liking her. I'm really sorry about that, man. That wasn't fair. When Ben first went to live with Jackie, I talked shit on her constantly. I used horrific terms to describe her that my brother had probably never even heard at that point. I called her a whore. I called her a cunt. I called her a cunt a lot, which I now regret. Jackie wasn't a cunt. She was a threat to me, and I was a threat to her. And in between us, trapped between our shared states of anxiety, anger, and fear, a little boy had tried to survive while being torn in two different directions. No matter how scared I was that Jackie wanted to take Ben from me for good, it was shitty of me to speak badly of her in front of him. He was just a fucking kid, and Jackie was truly the only mother he'd ever known. I only have a handful of faded memories of our mom, and some of them are really painful, but at least I have them. Ben was too young to remember her at all when she died. I hate that he didn't get to know her even a little. It's stupid to be so sad all of the time. It's okay. I loved having you as my big brother. You were pretty great at it. You built the best forts, and you always knew what I should do if another kid was picking on me. You made me feel safe all the time. I liked feeling safe with you. One night, 3.5 years ago, after a particularly harrowing beating courtesy of my old pal Gary, I pledged to myself that I would never ever cry again. I curled up on my side amongst the thin, dirty, bloodied blankets I slept in, and I let myself bawl. I was hurt, and I was in pain, and I was scared about what was going to happen to me, so I let myself sob into those filthy blankets. And when I was done, I said enough, no more, never again. I broke that vow the night I read Silver's email, where she described what went down at Leon Wickman's spring fling party. I broke it again the night she was taken into the hospital with rope burns around her neck. And I break it now, as well. I permit myself 3 tears that course hot and quick over my temples into my hair before I dash the wetness away with the back of my hand. I didn't keep you safe, though, did I? If I had, you'd be here. We'd be halfway to fucking Oregon by now. My younger brother's voice remains quiet in my head this time. Even my own subconscious can't think of anything to argue that point. The fact is that I'm never not going to feel responsible for this. Across the cemetery, a woman bows down before a headstone, kneeling in front of it. It's still early, 8 maybe, but she's dressed in a suit, ready for the day. She's probably going to work once she's done here. She's calm, serene even. She made her peace with the death of her loved one some time ago, and this morning's brief sojourn amongst the headstones feels more like visiting an old friend than trying to dig broken glass out from underneath her skin. I'm making assumptions by the handful, naturally, but the way she laughs quietly as she talks to her loved one sounds easy and relaxed. It's going to be a long time before I'll be able to affect that same level of ease in front of this headstone. The ground's so fucking cold. I laid my leather jacket out before I laid down on the damn grass, but the chill from the earth has managed to seep through it and into my bones without a problem. I try not to think about how cold it must be for Ben, 8 feet beneath me, lying in his coffin. I try not to imagine the state of decomposition his body is in now, 4 months after his death. Another tear slips past my defenses, a fresh surge of pain lancing through my side, right into the center of my chest. Ah, fuck. I drag in a shallow sip of air, trying to force the agony into submission, but it won't be leashed. Fuck. I'm so sorry, Ben. I throw my arm over my eyes, blocking out the sun, pretending not to feel the fresh onslaught of tears that fall. For the first time ever, I hate myself for not believing in God. If there's no God, then there's no afterlife, and that means Ben can't hear me now. There should be an afterlife. If anyone deserved one, it was my brother. He was just a fucking kid. I find counting helps. I jerk upright, coughing for no good fucking reason. It feels as though I just got caught doing something dirty. The woman from across the cemetery is standing 8 headstones over with her purse clutched tightly in her hand. She's blonde, 40, 42, in a light black trench coat and a formal black pantsuit. She looks like she could be a bank manager. With a sorry tip of her head, she looks at the carved marble behind me and sighs. When children die, the world never seems to be able to right itself on its axis again. I'm sorry for that. I don't know what to say. I just stare at her, willing her to leave so I can pretend like I wasn't just sobbing in public. With a cursory swipe of my hands, I scrub my face, sniffing hard as I breathe in sharply. Yeah, well, that's all I've got. The woman hangs her head. Like I said, counting helps. In 4, out for 4. That's how I remembered to breathe for a really long time. Eventually, you'll be able to pause in between, and it won't even feel like you're about to crack open. She smiles sadly again, nodding like she's fielding some pretty painful memories of her own. Something to look forward to, I guess. She goes. Doesn't try to talk me out of crying alone in a graveyard. Doesn't ask if I'm okay. Doesn't try to convince me that I should leave, or get better, or get on with my life. She continues on her way, without telling me her name or asking me mine, because your names aren't important. We understand each other just fine without them, and we both know words are pointless when it comes to this kind of hurt. You should go home, Alex. Silver's gonna be worried about you. I know, man. I know. She'll have woken up by now and found my side of the bed to be empty and long cold. Bailing on the apartment first thing was a shitty thing to do, considering that she's been planning on cooking a birthday breakfast for me for weeks now. But I needed to get this out of the way. If things had been different, I'd have been on my bike this morning, sitting outside Jackie's house before the dawn, ready to take Ben back home with me, come hell or high water. He would have been expecting me. When I woke up at 4 this morning with this restlessness in my soul, this tremendous weight sitting on my chest, it felt like he was still expecting me. And to get up and eat breakfast and go about my day without going to him first? Well, I just couldn't do that. Now that I've visited my brother and said my piece, it is time to get back to Silver. I take one last long, shuddering breath, trying to manufacture a little positivity for the day ahead, when I look up, and there she is, walking toward me across the cemetery with a large basket in her hand. I blink, making sure I'm not seeing things, but the image of her dressed in blue jeans and a pretty white lacy top beneath her red peacoat persists instead of vanishing. She's here, in the cemetery. It's as though I've conjured her here simply by acknowledging how badly I need her all of a sudden. She stops 5 feet away, smiling gently at me. Strands of her golden bronze hair, already lightening from the little spring sun we've had here in Raleigh, dance on the soft breeze that sighs between the headstones, with the cool, early morning sun bathing her face in light. She looks stunning. Hell, she's such a beautiful creature. This girl is beyond the realm of comprehension. She can't be fucking real. Most days, I'm convinced that I've hallucinated her into existence. My mother hallucinated shit on the regular. No reason why I shouldn't be following in her footsteps. I can't quite muster the appropriate level of concern when I think things like this, though. If Silver is a hallucination, then so be it. Let me go mad if it means I get to spend the rest of my life with her. I will descend into lunacy, and I will go gladly. So far, my experience of madness has been sublime. With a casual nod of her head, Silver points with her chin off to the left, signaling gently on a long exhale. Thought about grabbing a breakfast ice cream for you from the truck in the parking lot. Then I got to wondering why anyone would be callous enough to set up their ice cream truck in a cemetery parking lot, and I didn't want to support that kind of shady business practice. Holy hell. She's stunning, she's strong as fuck, and she knows how to defuse a tense, potentially awkward situation in a heartbeat. I laugh, hanging my head for a second. The last thing I want is for Silver to catch me post-breakdown, but too late to do anything about it now. My eyes are still burning and my cheeks are likely still flushed from my crying jag. I just need a moment to regroup and separate myself from my heartbreak before I give myself over to her completely. Pity, I say, clearing my throat. Could have done with a screwball right about now.
I mean, I haven't heard Greensleeves yet. They're probably still there.
Silver teases.
I felt like a Choco Taco myself, but I didn't want to look like an insensitive graveyard tourist.
Oh yeah, I hate those fucking guys.
Me too. They're the worst.
I laugh again. But the sound is strangled this time. Silver doesn't say anything. She sets down the basket she's holding next to Ben's headstone. Then she quietly arranges a thick blanket on the ground, kneeling down on it as she then begins to unpack the items she's brought with her. 3 containers covered with metal foil, 1 thermos flask, knives and forks, plastic camping plates, and a small cardboard box that looks like it came from the bakery across the street. A cacophony of smells hit the back of my nose as I finally steel myself, finally exiting the stormy emotions that had a hold of me before she arrived. Took me too long, but I met Silver's gaze, nodding back at her when she nods at me. She doesn't need to ask her question, it's written all over her. I'm okay, I confirm. Just tough morning, you know?
I do. She says, scooting to sit beside me. I packed most of this up last night. I figured you'd want to make a trip here and have a moment with him before you could face anything else. And I considered staying back at your place and waiting for you there, too. But I got to thinking that you might eventually need some company, so I hope you don't mind.
God, Argento, I'm so glad you're here. I might start crying all over again. I joke. The joke falls flat, though, mostly because of my miserable, borderline pathetic delivery. Silver leans into me, resting her head on my shoulder. Like the class act that she is, she doesn't mention the whole crying thing, even though I was the one to bring it up.
I'm so sorry, Alex. This is the worst day in the world, isn't it?
Yes, for me it is. After the day Maeve showed up on my doorstep with tragic news, and the day I watched Ben being lowered into the ground, today really is the worst day in the world. It should be a momentous, happy day. Birthdays are supposed to be celebrated and enjoyed, but I've been dreading today ever since I properly processed the fact that Ben was dead.
and I wasn't going to be bringing him to live with me the very second I turned 18. I'm so grateful that Silver's not trying to ram rainbows and butterflies down my throat right now. It would have been understandable, forgivable even, if she'd wanted to try to spin today in a positive light and make a big deal out of it. But she knows me. She gets me. She loves me. And she knows today could never have been anything other than a somber affair. I turn and kiss her on the temple, closing my eyes as I lean my forehead against her hair. She smells of flowers and sunshine and the laundry detergent I washed my bedsheets in yesterday when I knew she was going to be spending the night. "Do you know how much I love you, Silver Parisi?" I murmur. "A lot," she whispers. "Almost as much as I love you." My smile hurts. It feels so sweet. "And do you know how dark and utterly shitty my life would be without you in it?"
"Pitch black?" she guesses. "Charcoal black? Obsidian black?"
"Obsidian black, probably." She nods wisely as though this choice makes the most sense.
"I'm glad your life isn't obsidian black. I'm glad I lighten it up just a little."
I sit up straight, shifting so that I can take her face in my hands. Her eyes skip over my features one by one, and her irises look like mercury, like shifting lightning trapped inside a glass bottle. "You don't just light me up a little. You are the goddamn sun, Argento," I tell her. "You give off so much heat and life and joy that it's fucking spilling out of me. I have more life than I know what to do with. It's just that losing him, losing Ben, that pain was a black hole that just kept getting bigger and bigger for a second there. I thought it was gonna swallow me whole. You kept me going, though. You gave me what I needed to cling on, and I was a shit, and I'm so sorry for the way..." She cups her hand over my mouth, slowly shaking her head.
"Despite the rumor mill at Raleigh High, you're human, Alessandro, and people break open and fall apart when people they love die. It's a brutal truth. Never try and apologize to me again, or I'll revoke your back rub privileges."
I don't seem to recall there being back rub privileges. The words come out muffled since she's still covering my mouth with her hand. She laughs, winking at me suggestively, lowering her hand.
"If you play your cards right, there might be back rub privileges down the line. In the meantime, I have a question for you."
"Oh?" She looks very serious indeed.
"On a scale of 1 to 10, how weird is it to eat a birthday breakfast in a cemetery?"
I'm gonna say that would be a 7, but I'm also will say that I'm ravenous and I don't care how weird it is. Whatever you got in those containers smells fucking delicious, and I think we should devour all of it right now before it gets cold. I'm not really hungry, I just want to make her smile, which she does as she unwraps the dishes, unveiling her birthday breakfast masterpieces. Chicken and waffles in one dish, pancakes and freshly cut strawberries in another, and last but not least, bacon and cheesy eggs in the third. So much food we'll never come close to finishing it all. We give it a good goddamn try, though. The second I fork some of the chicken and waffles into my mouth, I realize just how hungry I actually am, and I get to work. Ben wouldn't mind us eating at his grave. He'd wholeheartedly approve, I think to myself, as I drain my second cup of coffee from the thermos Silver brought to our macabre early morning picnic. He would have gorged himself on Silver's pancakes until he made himself sick. Pancakes were his favorite. Once we've finished stuffing our faces and we're so full we're groaning, Silver grabs the picnic basket, dragging it toward her. I begin to stack the dishes, thinking it's time to clean up, but Silver stops me.
"Not yet. If we're breaking cemetery etiquette, we might as well do it properly. You need to open your presents," she says.
I stare at her, a little dumbstruck. Her smile begins to fade.
"Oh, fuck. Presents are a little much. I should have gauged that a little better. Sorry."
No, I just, it's just that I don't think anyone's bought me a birthday present in..." I rack my memory, trying to do the math, and then it hits me. I haven't received a birthday present since my mother died. That is just too fucking depressing to admit out loud, though, so I simply laugh and shrug like it's no big deal. Silver hesitates as if she knows exactly how long it's been since someone was kind to me on my birthday, but mercifully, she doesn't say anything about it. She reaches inside the basket, producing a small box wrapped in blue and white stripy wrapping paper. I accept the box with trepidation. How the fuck do normal people receive gifts? How do they fucking react? What the hell do they say? Most importantly, why does this feel so fucking awkward right now? Thanks. God, I'm such a fucking moron. The paper's cool. Silver looks heavenward, groaning.
The paper was 99 cents from the general store. It was all they had left after Christmas. Just open it already, Moretti. I'm gonna break out in hives if you make me wait much longer.
She grumbles as I open her gift with care, peeling back the tape and unfolding it at either end instead of ripping through the stripy paper. At one point, she almost snatches the present from my hands and tears into it herself. I manage to get into the box before she has a chance, though. Underneath the wrapping paper is a small jewelry box. Amused, I hold it up, arching an eyebrow. Bling, Parisi?
Ah, open the damn box, Alex.
Okay, okay, little Miss Impatient. I snap the box open, curious as to what I'll find inside. And there, on the blue velvet cushion inside, is a gold medallion. It's small, the same size as the Saint Christopher I wear around my neck, but there's no saint engraved on this medallion's surface. It's a crest, one I'm familiar with. I take it out of the box, inspecting it closely. Along the bottom, around the outer edge of the coin's surface, is the word Parisi.
It's kind of stupid, I know, but that side bears my family's crest, and the other side?
I've already flipped it over to find the Moretti family crest on the other side.
I know how you feel. I know that with your mom gone and now Ben, too,
Silver says, struggling with the words.
I know it might feel like you're alone, but you're not, Alex. I am your family, and you are mine. Parisi, Moretti, they're just words, really, ideas. I had both our names engraved on this to show that those ideas are one and the same. We're bound together forever, Alex, always. Two sides of the same coin.
I hold the medallion in the palm of my hand, turning it one way and then the other, battling with my emotions. I try to string a sentence together in my head, but every time I think I'm almost there, whatever sentiment I've cobbled together doesn't do justice to what I'm feeling. I put the medallion back on its cushion briefly so I can reach up and unfasten the clasp on the chain around my neck. Silver watches intently as I thread her gift onto the chain so that it hangs right next to Saint Christopher.
It's nothing really, just a little trinket.
Silver begins to say, but I cut her off, crushing my mouth to hers. The kiss is long and deep, and it burns in my fucking soul. When I pull back, I say, it's not nothing. It's everything, Silver. It's more than I know what to do with. Thank you. I'll die before I take it off. We pack up our picnic, and we get ready to head back to the apartment. As we leave, I whisper a goodbye for now to my brother, not caring if Silver hears it. See you around, little man. I love you. I love you, too. Happy birthday, Alex.
44. Cameron. When you have kids, your dreams, your hopes, and your aspirations are no longer your own. Every positive thing you wish for becomes a wish offered up on behalf of someone else. For your children, you pray for health. You pray that they'll be content and never suffer heartbreak or misery. As they play and you watch their personalities develop one day at a time, you hope that life will be kind to them and you'll be able to arm them with every skill and character trait they'll need to navigate the murky, treacherous waters of adulthood. Most of all, you hope that they'll find someone to love and be loved by.
For a family and a support network of their own, that will bring them joy and fulfillment. At least that's how it was for me. From the very first moment I held Silver in my arms, I knew that whatever wishes or luck I'd been allotted in this life were now all hers. Max came along, and it was only natural that his name be added to my fevered pleas for happiness and safety. I gave up on asking for anything for myself. Seemed greedy when I had two small people depending on me who needed me to take care for them to the best of my ability. I never resented the fact that I've had to sacrifice most of my own dreams along the way. I'll forever keep on using up every scrap of chance, luck, and fate that comes my way on my children, too. But tonight, I make a rare exception. I allow myself one wish purely for me and no one else. God, I hope everything goes well tonight. The house is eerily quiet as I collect the keys to the new car from the mail stand. I hover by the front door, my palm resting on the cold, smooth metal of the handle, listening for a second to the roaring silence. A year ago, my kids were bickering with one another. The television was blaring. My wife was hollering at anyone who'd listen, trying to find something she'd misplaced, and everything felt so alive. Now, the cavernous old house feels abandoned. So weird. It feels as though I'm a stranger here now. A ghost, haunting empty, forgotten rooms. Outside, the evening's balmy, dusk just setting in. My favorite thing about summer, the fact that it doesn't get dark until 8 in the evening. A light, playful breeze tugs at my jacket, and I jump in the car and tap my destination's address into the onboard GPS. During the 12-minute drive across town, my mind races out of control as I consider all of the things that could go wrong once I arrive. By the time I pull up to the curb outside the small, neat, little cottage set back from the road, I've almost talked myself into calling the whole thing off and driving back home again with my tail between my legs.
Jesus, Dad, don't be such a coward. I thought us Parises were made of sterner stuff.
The voice in my head, Silver's voice, might be a figment of my imagination, but that's exactly what my daughter would say to me now, if she were sitting next to me in the passenger seat. She'd roll her eyes, laughing at my discomfort, and then she'd find a way to bribe me into hauling my ass out of the car and up the flower-lined pathway that leads to the cottage's red front door. Silver would never let something so irrelevant as nerves prevent her from taking a step into the unknown. She proved that well enough when she packed up her room and moved across the country to Dartmouth with the guy she promised to marry. Kid always has been far braver than me. Steeling myself, I glanced down at my phone, checking the screen for the 15th time since I left the house. No cancellation texts have come through, no apologetic messages asking for a rain check. Looks like this is all still a go. Come on, you stupid bastard. You got this. You're handsome, you're funny, your beard looks fucking amazing. Get out of the damn car or I'm gonna kick your ass. As pep talks go, this one's pretty bad. The promise of a beating's obviously an empty threat, since I'm not a fan of pain, and I'm hardly going to thrash my own backside. But it does light a persistent, albeit small, fire underneath me. Next thing I know, I'm grabbing the flowers I bought at the boutique florist's on the high street from the seat next to me, and I'm getting out of the car and slamming the car door closed behind me. One foot in front of the other, Cam. Left, right, left, right, left, right. Nice work. You're not nervous at all. You're confident. You're a fucking catch. You're successful. You've got money. You've got all of your own teeth. Oh, that's just great. Awesome. Well done. You've got all your own teeth. Like she'd go out with a guy who was missing. I'm halfway up the path, berating myself for being weird, when the front door opens and a man steps out into the fading, honeyed light. Our eyes make contact, and I nearly drop the bouquet of flowers onto the ground. Al. I catch myself before I can finish his name. It isn't Alex. This man's older, with deep frown lines and a tired, sickly look to him that makes me think he drinks too much. A broad smile forms on his face, altering his features entirely so that he looks nothing at all like my future son-in-law in less than a blink of an eye.
Yeah, we share a passing resemblance, huh?
The guy says. So this must be Giacomo. Has to be. There's no other reasonable explanation for how similar he and Alex look. Their dark hair and their dark eyes are so alike it's uncanny. The way he holds himself, like he's ready and prepared to throw a punch at the slightest provocation, has Alex written all over it. But there's something fundamentally different about this man. There's an edge to him that I don't like. I can't put my finger on it.
You always early for a date, man?
Alex's father asks, as he slaps together a pair of leather gloves. He puts them on, frowning at me like he can't quite figure out what to make of me.
You ask me, he looks a little too keen. Supposed to make him sweat a little, you know?
Rocking back on my heels, I take a look around the front yard. The small, yet well-manicured lawn. The rose bushes underneath the cottage window. The little yellow windmill nestled in amongst the ranunculus and the pretty wild daisies, and I run my tongue over my teeth.
This might come as a shock to you, Giacomo, but people aren't toys. You're not supposed to play games with them or try to manipulate them. Life's far less complicated if you're straight up with people. I found that being honest, being yourself, it gets you way further than if you're constantly striving for control and power over others.
Giacomo huffs down his nose, flaring his nostrils. He doesn't seem to like or agree with the statement I've just made. He squints off to the right where a huge cruiser is parked against the curb 50 feet down the road. His bike, I presume.
Kids made it safe to New Hampshire, I heard, he says stiffly. Personally, I can't see the attraction, tying themselves to a stuffy institution like that for 4 years. Spending all that money on an education that'll end up being no good to him. Should have gone traveling or something. Gotten some real-life experience.
Oh, yeah? The foster care system, getting shot, raped, arrested, nearly killed a couple of times apiece. I think both our children have had enough life experience already, don't you? Dartmouth's exactly what they need right now. It'll be good for them. They're both too smart. Brilliant, actually, to be wasting their intellect riding around the country on a motorcycle, waiting for trouble to track them down and destroy their lives all over again. I can't get this bitter, acidic taste out of my mouth. It seems to grow worse whenever Giacomo speaks. This is the man who abandoned Alex and Ben when they needed him. He's the piece of shit who abused Alex's mother and left her high and dry in her darkest hours. Looking at him now, I'm surprised to realize that I don't just want to hit the bastard. I want to really hurt him.
What are you doing here anyway?
I push my glasses up the bridge of my nose.
I'd have thought you'd be long gone by now.
Monty's dead. The dreadnoughts have been disbanded. Alex is gone. There's nothing to keep you in Raleigh anymore. Giacomo wags a finger at me, a fake smile plastered all over his face.
You don't like me much, do you, Cameron? I'd be lying if I said I did. Everyone's so quick to judge, aren't they? Oh, Giacomo's the bad guy. Giacomo's a piece of shit. Giacomo doesn't deserve to breathe the same fresh air as the rest of us Raleigh well-to-dos. Well, I am officially hurt, Cam. Us about to become family and all. Does this mean you won't be setting a spot at the table for me when my son and your precious little firecracker come home for Christmas?
I shake my head, looking him square in the eyes.
No, you won't be welcome here.
Giacomo chuckles darkly.
Who? You weren't kidding, huh? Straight from the hip.
He twists quickly, making a finger gun and pretending to draw it on me, using his thumb to cock the hammer and shoot me 3 times in quick succession.
He's too old for you to adopt him, Cameron. He's got my blood running in his veins. He's a Moretti. He's my son. Best you don't forget that.
God, what a bastard. He ran out on Alex when he was 6 years old and he never looked back. Why the hell would he bother trying to claim him now? When Alex doesn't need or want him in his life.
There you go again, I say sadly.
I'll say it one more time with feeling. People are not toys, Giacomo. You can't break someone and toss them aside only to throw a temper tantrum when someone else takes interest in them. Alex is a man now, and you don't even know him. I'm afraid that probably isn't going to change. Like a feral, threatened dog, Giacomo Moretti growls.
Whatever you say, Poindexter, I suppose time will tell. Alex ain't cut out for college, and he sure as hell ain't cut out for marriage. I'm betting your precious Silver comes crying to Daddy about her broken heart before the end of the first semester. Until then, I'm sure my boy'll have his fun. We Moretti's always do. Sighing, I pinch the bridge of my nose. It's so, so sad how wrong he is, truly.
The blood in Alex's veins has nothing to do with who he's become. You shove the Moretti name in people's faces like it's something to be feared. By rights, the Moretti name's something your son should be ashamed of. You're weak, and you're selfish, and you don't give a fuck about anyone else. Alex is nothing like you, though. He's brave, and he's good. He's loyal, and his capacity to love, despite everything you allowed him to suffer through, is remarkable. You might have tainted your family name, but Alex has made it shine. He's restored it to something he can be proud of, and I'll be damned proud when Silver becomes a Moretti too, because as far as I'm concerned, it's a name that represents strength and courage. Alex might not be my son by birth. He might not even be my son by law yet, but he is one of the brightest parts of my life, and I'm honored to have him as a part of my family. Now, if you'll excuse me, if I hurry, I can still be early for my date. I'm not a very brave person by nature, which is why I'm all the more impressed with myself as I stroll past Alex's father and up the path toward the cottage without flinching. I only know he's not going to kill me when I hear the growl of his motorcycle start up on the street. Once he's gone, I lift my hand to knock on the cottage door, and Maeve Rogers answers with a smile on her face. Epilogue. Ivy League. Jesus fucking Christ. When he was still alive, Gary Quincy took great pleasure in telling me what a worthless piece of shit I was. I can't count how many times he assured me that I was never going to amount to anything, and all the while he was spewing hate and did his best to tear me down, I was scheming. Tell me I'm worthless, and I'll make damn sure I'm worth more than you. Tell me I'm stupid and I'll break my neck to make sure I'm way smarter than you. Tell me I'm never going to amount to shit and I'll rise above just to spite you. So now, through a series of bizarre, horrific, and sporadically wonderful events, I am a fucking Ivy League college student. What a fucking riot. Thanks to Coach Foley's insistent and highly annoying nagging, brutal training regime, and her amazing stubbornness, not only did I manage to get into Dartmouth with Silver, but I bagged myself a full ride, too. The woman's part psychopath, part miracle worker, and I owe her big time. Graduation was a surreal affair, to say the least. I didn't feel like I belonged up there on that stage beside Silver, and yet I fucking earned my place there. Now I stick out like a sore thumb at college, just like I did at Raleigh. Only difference is, no one here really seems to care. The ink, my clothes, the way I walk and talk, none of it fazes anyone at all. And most important of all, Silver's happy. She's more than just happy, she's flourishing. It's the most amazing thing. I get to watch her put down new roots in this remarkable place, and I get to watch her grow into herself. Thanks to Cam's none-too-subtle influence, I plan on studying architectural design as my major. Silver's majoring in space sciences. We have no shared classes. We rush out of the door in the mornings at different times, and sometimes we're both so exhausted by the end of the day that we don't even get to eat dinner before we're passing out on the couch. The classes are hard, the workload is unforgiving, and there aren't enough hours in the day. But I'm with Silver. I could be walking through fire and brimstone and I wouldn't mind, so long as I have her by my side.
Did you know your new friend thinks the earth is flat?
Silver asks, taking a giant bite out of her pizza slice. We have assignments hanging over us like the blade of a guillotine, but we've taken a break to fuel up on carbs and sugar. A Hammer horror B-movie plays on the TV with the sound muted. The air conditioner in our small, yet perfect apartment whirs industriously, doing little to cool down the living room. But I'm not complaining. If it were cooler, Silver would be wearing more than her skimpy little shorts and a thin t-shirt, and I am enjoying the view far too much to bitch about the stifling heat. I arch an eyebrow at her, jamming my own pizza slice into my mouth. Monroe? She nods. Her hair's tied up in a messy bun, strands fallen loose, framing her face. Silver looks incredible when she's run a brush through her hair, and she's wearing a little makeup. But she looks best when her skin is bare, and she looks like she's just been fucked, which she has.
They have a flat earther society on campus?
For fuck's sake, just when you think you've made a normal friend. And Monroe's a member? Monroe? The guy with the buzz cut and the tricked out Dodge Charger? Silver swallows, smiling, and leans over to kiss me.
Sorry, Paso Roto, I think he's actually president of the club.
Fuck.
Back to the drawing board on the Xander replacement, then.
I pull her plump, too tempting bottom lip into my mouth, and I give it a gentle bite, running my tongue playfully over the spot that I just pressed between my teeth. Xander should not be replaced. Xander is a pain in the ass. I'm relieved I don't have to deal with his bullshit anymore. Silver laughs, falling back onto the sofa. The skin around the base of her throat that was once bruised dark purple is back to normal now. Just like the doctors promised, you'd never know to look at her that she'd even been hurt.
God, you're such a liar, Alessandro Moretti. You miss having him around. I know you do.
She might be right. I'm on the verge of admitting to myself that Xander Hawkins proved himself to be a good friend after all. It'll be a long time yet that I admit anything of the sort out loud, though, and potentially years before I tell him so to his smug, annoyingly cocky face.
I got an email from Mom today, Silver tells me. She bought the house in Toronto. My little brother's officially going to be a Canadian.
You pissed? I know how much Silver misses Max. They've been FaceTiming with each other nearly every day, though Silver's been quick to cut their calls short whenever I come home. I think she feels bad that she's building a better relationship with her brother, even though I've told her countless times that it doesn't bother me. If Ben were still alive, I'd be talking to him 24/7.
No, she says, shaking her head. He loves it there, and he's made a ton of new friends. I think it'll be good for him. He asked if we'd go visit him soon.
Huh. You think you can handle spending 5 minutes in a room with your mother? Things haven't been as great on the Parisi mother-daughter front. Casey's revelation at prom that Silver's mom had an affair with her father went down like a lead balloon. Silver confronted her about it, but the woman refused to discuss the matter. In Silver's eyes, her silence is tantamount to an admission of guilt. Silver pulls a face. She's getting better at changing the subject.
Oh, and speaking of mail, a package came from Maeve for you this morning.
I smirk at the mention of the woman's name. He hasn't told Silver yet because he's a pussy of the highest order, but Cameron confided in me that he'd had a date with my ex-social worker and they'd hit it off in a pretty big way. Apparently they exchanged numbers at the diner the day Silver and I played in public together for the first time and have been texting each other ever since. I figured I'd be rid of Maeve the moment I turned 18, but now I'm not so sure. She's fussed over and mothered the shit out of me ever since she took over my case when I moved to Raleigh. Now there's a chance that she could end up being my mother-in-law for real. This shit just gets weirder and weirder, I swear. Probably a court order demanding we go back to our dorms and stay there like good little kids, I muse. Technically, Silver and I are not supposed to be living together. On paper, Silver's official residence is at Morton Hall in East Wheelock House. I have digs assigned on the same floor. Cam and Maeve both signed off on paperwork to prove that Silver and I have a domestic partnership, but the powers that be said we hadn't been together long enough for the administration to recognize the relationship.
so I used the money I had left over from my time working as Monty's runner to rent a small pad 5 minutes away from campus for us instead. We show our faces in dorms every now and then, study there sometimes, use the laundry just to put on a show for the floor directors, but we live here. After we've eaten, I grab the package from Maeve, wondering what the fuck is inside it. When you age out of the foster care system and CPS is no longer responsible for your well-being, it's not like they send you a fucking certificate or anything. Much like a bad breakup, you part ways, hoping to God you never have to hear from or speak to the other party ever again. I pull the thick sheaf of papers out of the heavily taped padded envelope Maeve has sent me, expecting to find official documents inside. Maybe even a bill of some kind. I wouldn't put it past the board at Denny to somehow try and charge me for the time I spent in juvie with Xander. The last thing I'm expecting to find are drawings. Pencil, pen, ink, even paint. And they're all of my mother. Alex, you don't need to work in a field like mine to know that families are complicated. It's a universal and very obvious truth. People are flawed and unreliable. They hurt each other all the time, especially those closest to them, which makes the pain they cause so much worse. But you must know that even the very worst people occasionally have redeeming moments. Your father came to see me this morning. He didn't want your address, and he swore he wasn't going to bother you. He seemed quite adamant that you were going to come to your senses and track him down after all is said and done, which I really hope you do not do. Anyway, he brought these drawings to me and asked if I would pass them on. Your mother was a striking, very beautiful woman, Alex. I've seen pictures of her, but the way your father captured her in these sketches only heightens her beauty. The sheer amount of times he drew her shows just how much he must have loved her at one point in his life. There are so many things about your father that are ugly, but the amount of love he poured into these pictures of your mother is beautiful, Alex. You hate him, and I don't blame you for that. I kind of hate him for you, too. But that doesn't mean you can't love the art he created. I hope everything in New Hampshire's going well for both you and Silver. Please pass on my warmest regards to her. Sincerely, Maeve. I feel like I'm being torn straight down the middle, furious and elated, as I leaf through the drawings and sketches in my hand. There must be at least 50 of them on different sizes of paper, some of them on proper thick artist stock, while some of the most detailed, lovely pieces were drawn on scrap. I turn over a drawing of my mother with her knees drawn up to her chest, a half-eaten apple held in one of her hands, her hair wild, head tossed back, her mouth open wide as she laughs, only to discover that it was sketched on the back of an overdue invoice for a Bosch power drill dated January 29, 1995. The second I register the way my mother's laughing, a slew of memories hit me hard like a sledgehammer to the chest. I can barely breathe around them. My mother would sink into the deepest, darkest depths of depression and wouldn't smile for months. But when the depression didn't have its claws in her and she was gloriously herself, she smiled a lot. She laughed with her whole body. I hear the breathless, raucous, unmistakable sound of her laughter when I look at that picture, and it makes my heart shatter to pieces. Don't be sad, Passerotto. There's so much to be happy about. You're no longer a boy, you're a man. No, you're a king amongst men. You have the love of a beautiful woman. I'm so proud of you, mio amore. You're lighting up the world. Go on. Go out into the world and be great. Be the man I know you can be. I haven't heard my mother's voice in my head for quite a while, I realize. With a heavy dose of sadness that makes my throat throb with emotion, I think that this will be the very last time I hear it. I don't know how I know that. I just do. Wow, those are spectacular, Silver whispers behind me, leaning over the back of the couch to look at the drawings over my shoulder. Holy crap, Giacomo could have earned a living as an artist. What the hell? He could have.
There was nothing stopping him from becoming an illustrator or designer or a freelance artist of some kind. He chose a different path for himself, though, a selfish path that, in the end, benefited no one, not even himself.
She was so lovely, Alex, Silver says softly. I really wish I'd gotten to meet her.
Yeah. I run my fingers over another image of my mother, a dull ache pounding in my chest. Mom would have loved Silver. She loved anyone who knew their own mind and wasn't afraid to say what was on it. And Silver, she would have adored my mother in return. It was impossible not to fall in love with her. I have so few photos of my mom. There were never many taken, I suppose, and those that did exist were lost when she killed herself and CPS took us away. I was too young to ask what was going to happen to her things. Everything my mother had owned was likely bagged up by her old landlord and taken to a thrift store. Could have been discarded in a dumpster for all I knew. Giacomo certainly never came back for any of it. These pictures are a connection to my mother that I've been missing since I was 6 years old. I don't give a shit that Giacomo drew them. I'll cherish them for as long as I live. Days later, when I come home, Silver's waiting for me by the door to the apartment, and she's wearing a look of excitement on her face. She bounces from one foot to the other, clapping her hands over her mouth as I walk in. I dump my bag at my feet, smirking at her ridiculousness. Oh my God, you won the lottery. You're rich now, and you're leaving me to become Billy Joel's unpaid intern.
Psh! If Billy asked me to be his unpaid intern, I'd dump your ass and be on the road in 5 seconds flat. I wouldn't need to win the lottery. Getting to be Billy Joel's unpaid intern is winning the lottery.
All right. Noted. Noted. She's still grinning nervously, unable to keep still. I slowly walk around her, making a show of studying her closely. NASA called, and they've invited you to become their youngest ever astronaut. She rolls her eyes.
Do you have any idea how much studying I have to do before they'll even think about letting me near a shuttle, Alex? There's a reason why astronauts are ancient by the time they get to go up.
Okay. So, your dad told you he's dating Maeve, and you're excited about getting a new mom? She freezes, eyes growing wide.
What?
Never mind, joking. I'm joking. What are you so excited about, Argento? The suspense is killing me.
Go back to what you said about my dad and Maeve.
Or you could just pretend I didn't breathe a word about that and spill your guts instead. Having circled her fully twice, I come to a stop in front of her and plant my hands on her hips, snatching her up off the ground. She squeals, wrapping her legs around my waist, her tits crushing up against my chest, and my dick begins to throb hopefully. God, you are never satisfied, I tell it. Unfortunately, the universe might have seen fit to give my cock a mind of its own, but it neglected to give it ears. It doesn't listen. Silver, so breathtakingly beautiful in the summer dress she's wearing, the material's a rich blue tone that really brings out her eyes, laces her arms around my neck, planting a delicate kiss on my forehead, right between my eyebrows.
I did something for you, in the bedroom. I hope you don't mind.
I never mind when you do things for me in the bedroom.
You're so bad, she laughs. Come on, put me down. I want to show you.
You're sure you want to show me? Because you're looking a little panicked right now.
I'm not panicked. I'm just...
She shrugs, her cheeks coloring. She's definitely panicking.
I'm just hoping I haven't taken over something that you wanted to do is all.
It's too damn easy to screw with her sometimes. She's goddamn adorable when she's embarrassed. Fuck, I rumble, biting her nose with mine. You bought yourself a strap-on, didn't you? Kinky, I'm a firm believer that the anus is an out-hole, but I'll try anything once if it'll make you happy. She looks scandalized.
I do not want to dominate you with a strap-on. Wherever you got that idea from, you can send it right back because it's never gonna happen. For fuck's sake, come with me. We'll be here all night otherwise.
She grabs me by the hand, and that's it. She's physically dragging me through the bedroom. There are physics textbooks and notebooks all over the bed. She's been studying hard while I was gone.
but there are also plastic wrappers and cardboard packaging all over the floor, too.
Looks like you had a party in here without me. What have you been up to,
I stopped talking, because when I look back at her, I see what she's been up to. Opposite our bed, dozens of picture frames have been mounted on the wall in a collage style, slotted together like a jigsaw puzzle. From plain black wood to raw pine to fancy old-fashioned gilded gold, every single picture frame is different. Like not a single one of them matches any of the others. Of course, inside the frames are Giacomo's drawings of my mom. But not only that. There are photos of Ben in the frames, too. Pictures I've never even seen before. Shots of him playing baseball and posing with his friends. Oh, God. There are pictures of me and him together, too. Selfies I took for him on his phone for him to keep so that he knew I was always going to be there for him. I sit down heavily on the bed, right on top of one of Silver's textbooks. She looks at me worriedly, covering her mouth with her hands again.
I'm sorry. I know it's a lot, isn't it? It's like I just went ahead and gathered up everything that made you hurt, and I plastered it all over our bedroom wall. God, I'm so stupid. I can take it down. I'm sorry.
She lifts a picture of Ben from the wall, looking for somewhere to put it so she can take down the others, too.
Silver, stop, I say softly. God, I don't know what's wrong with me. I have no idea what I was thinking.
I love it, Silver.
You don't have to say that.
I know I don't. Please, just, Silver, wait. Don't take that down. Listen to me. I love it. She sniffs, daring to glance over at me. Her eyes look glassy, like she's on the verge of tears. Her pain is enough to have me back on my feet and hurrying across the bedroom to her. Seriously, please, do not cry, Argento. I'm not upset. It's fucking beautiful what you've done for me. I adore it. I love it. I want to keep it. It was just a lot to take in all at once, is all. I just needed a beat to process it. I cup Silver's face with my hand, and she leans into my palm, closing her eyes, sniffing. She says,
"You don't talk about him. I know how much it must still hurt."
Just to prove how right she is, my chest squeezes sharply, grief tightening around my heart like a fist. Normally, I'd avoid this conversation, moving on to a lighter topic, but that's the whole point, isn't it? Silver notices when I do that, and she takes note. Some days, it feels like I should shut myself away from the world and never show my face again. The guilt's crushing. I know, before you say it, I know his death wasn't my fault, not really. It was an accident. But he should have been in Hawaii, Silver. He should have been playing soccer on a beach, and instead Jackie was bringing him back to see me. I'm gonna have to live with that knowledge somehow. Some days I can't live with it. It feels like I'll die from the weight of that knowledge pressing down on me. I take a shaky breath, pausing while I pull my shit together. Other days are easier, though. The sadness lets up for a minute or an hour, and I get to remember the good stuff. I get to laugh at the goofy, stupid shit we do together. And I think those minutes and those hours will become more frequent the more time passes. It's fucked up, you know? A part of me doesn't want to stop being sad. It feels like if I stop being sad all of the time, I'm betraying him, forgetting him.
You're never gonna forget him. He's a part of you, just like you are a part of him. He's going to be with you for the rest of your life, no matter where you go or what you do. You'll live your life for him and experience as many things as you can for him.
The way she looks up at me makes everything come into focus. She's a lens. I look into her eyes and everything that has been blurry and confusing for the better part of a lifetime suddenly just makes sense. She is cool water after years of thirst, a soothing balm after far too much hurt.
And soon, we're going to have a family of our own, she says, trailing off.
I carefully tuck a rogue strand of her hair behind her ear, aching to kiss her. I hold back, though. A family.
You're saying you actually want me to knock you up one of these days? Smiling, trying not to, suddenly shy, Silver nods.
Yes, she says quietly. One of these days, when we're done with college and we've learned the lessons we need to learn, I am going to want that more than anything, Alessandro Moretti. One day we'll have a son of our own, and you are going to be an amazing father, you know that?
Fear prickles at the back of my neck, 1,000 worries and concerns trying to make themselves heard all at once. I shut them down with one quiet thought, though. Silver believes I'll be a good father, and so I will. For her, I'll be anything she believes I can be. A son, I muse. Still a little shy, Silver dips her head, but she manages to look up at me when she tells me in a firm, unwavering voice,
"Yes, and when we meet him for the very first time, we will call him Ben."
This is the end of Reckless, a Podium Audio production. If you enjoyed this audiobook, we would love for you to rate and review it. For more unforgettable romances, check us out at podiumaudio.com and sign up for our newsletter. We promise we won't spam you. Also, consider joining our community of listeners, fans, and trolls on social media. We're active on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Reddit. We'd love to connect. You have been listening to Reckless, Book 3 of Raleigh Rebels, produced by Troy Odie. Written by Callie Hart. Performed by Teddy Hamilton and Charlotte North, members of SAG-AFTRA. Text copyright 2020 by Callie Hart. Production copyright 2020 by Podium Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.